Welcome to, you thought I was going to say the Wednesday rant. I actually did say it, but I didn't mean it. And the reason I didn't mean it is because I don't have anything to rant about today. I have been anticipating this little episode for quite some time. Probably about 6-8 months ago, my girl Teresa got me this neat little thing called an Easy Cap. And it's a cassette, it's like a Walkman, but it has a USB port, and you can run the USB port from this little machine that has a cassette in it and run it into the trusty dusty laptop I have. And then I can put together some other technical things and edit it out and make it work and take really old material that's in audio form in a cassette and kind of refurbish it like old furniture and make it as close as I can get to new again, which then gives me access to literally thousands and thousands of radio shows I've done over the years. So the stark contrast in quality is very obvious. Anything digital sounds, you know, clean as a whistle. This old audio that's been in cassette boxes for decades, that's a little bit more work for me. So the first one I put up a while back was Dr. Oz that I had on a few years ago at WGN that had somehow not made it to digital, but it was recorded on a cassette, so there's a lot of hissing and popping and all that kind of stuff. And then the second one I did just last week was Ed McMahon, and that was on digital and was converted over to CD immediately, so it sounded very different. And I have boxes and boxes and boxes of audio tapes, so I've gone through and kind of culled them out and moved them around, and I put the best stuff, what I think is the best stuff, in one box. And there's some great names in there, and I'll get into all that another time. But at the top of the list really is this interview that I did with the late great Christopher Reeve in 2002. And I have, it's not just the conversation we had, which is of moment to me, but it's the whole thing around it. It's all the lessons and the ideas and the thoughts and the concepts and the possibilities that I've really tried to integrate in every show that I do from some angle to bring a sense of perspective to life, because we it's so easy to lose perspective. It's so easy to get caught up in majoring in minor things until you fall off a horse and break your neck, and or you're in an auto accident, or you lose everything in business, or the doctor calls and says it's not good news. And those things happen every day to everyone everywhere. Regardless of how you vote or where you live or how much money you have or how many degrees you have, life for better or for worse is an equal opportunity employer, but it's also a destroyer at some point, and we have to deal with shit we never thought we would have to deal with. So when Christopher Reeve was injured in that equestrian accident in 1995, of course, you know, the world took a major hit. This is not supposed to happen to Superman. This is a 6'4", 200-pound, one of the best-looking humans on the planet, and he's in a wheelchair. And if anybody could ever walk again, it's got to be this guy. And that didn't happen. So years had gone past, and in 2002, they were opening this paralysis center, the PRC. There was a lot of media around all that. Larry King was still on the air at that time. I've never understood Larry King. To me, he's like an owl with rickets. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. That's just the look he's got for me. You know, here's the thing about Larry, just a little digression here. Larry King started out as a radio guy. He was an overnight radio guy for years and years and years, and somehow he was in the right place at the right time, and it clicked along. And the thing I did like about Larry King is what you heard on the radio overnight for years just got transferred to TV. He didn't become anything more or less than he already was. So I was always appreciated that about Larry King. I just never understood half the time, how the heck did he get there? But it's all about the agent. They're going to do this unveiling in New Jersey for the PRC. The Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation was opening this big paralysis center for people who were really up against it, because until that point, there had not been a national center for people. There was regional things, obviously, But they felt, Christopher and Dana Reeve felt like that this needed to be put in place, and they worked with a couple other local foundations and built it up over the years. So my producer at the time, Anne Marie, who she could find people, she actually did find people for the show that had already passed away. That's how good she was. And when we saw this was kind of working out in the news, we remembered that the first movie that Christopher Reeve ever did after Superman was a romantic comedy in 1980 called Somewhere in Time, which he co-starred with Jane Seymour. The film was shot on Mackinac Island in the UP of Michigan, where I lived and Anne Marie lived, and where my show emanated from. Even though it reached a vast Midwest audience, I did the show from the UP of Michigan, which was really an interesting place to be. And so we thought, well, maybe there's some leverage there. Maybe because of that history, that background, even though the movie was panned when it came out, and it did become a cult classic over the years because of cable and rentals and such. But we thought that might be leverage, and it was. And she was able to secure Christopher Reeve for an interview. It was the day after he was to be on Larry King. So he's doing Larry King at like 9 o'clock at night, Eastern time. And the next morning he was to be on with us at 9 o'clock AM, just 12 hours later. So I'm watching the Larry King show with Chris Reeve, and I want to make sure I don't repeat questions that Larry King comes up with. And one of the things I've always taken pride in doing these shows is I wanted to ask questions not that people were thinking about. I wanted to ask questions they weren't thinking about, whether it's my guest or the listeners, that I just didn't want to just repeat stuff, which I tend to do anyway, but I didn't want to repeat questions that have already been answered. It made no sense to me. I've always felt if I just had an open, a middle, and a closed question, the rest of it would fill itself in. So that's kind of what's worked for me over the years. I'm watching Larry King talk to Christopher Reeve. He's in his wheelchair in the studio, and they're going back and forth with very surface level stuff to me. And it is what it is. Of course, they were promoting this paralysis center. And so I started to see where the gaps were. I wanted to ask Christopher Reeve about his life and his faith and how this has changed him. And I didn't hear any of that in Larry King. Thought pretty good shape. Next morning, as I recall, and Dana Reeve was supposed to be on with him, with Chris. The next morning, probably 20 minutes, half hour before air, Anne Marie gets a phone call from their office and says, listen, Dana Reeve's not going to make it. She's exhausted from all this publicity tour stuff. And Mr. Reeve can only do like 10 minutes because he was with Larry King, you know, till late in the night for an hour straight on television. And we don't want to tax him. And we're like, fine, you know, 10 minutes is 10 minutes. We'll take it. Happy to have him. We'll spread the word. Do what we can. What happened right before we get on the air is Anne Marie connects me to Christopher Reeve, and I introduce myself. We had a nice, short, warm chat. And I said, listen, I know that we've gotten the word that you've been taxed, and it's been a long night. And, you know, any time you give is just wonderful, and we're happy to spread the word and help you out. And he said, screw that. I'll do as long as you want. And when he said that, I realized a couple things. Number one is that this is a man on a mission. I mean, I knew he was on a mission, but this is a man on a mission. His wife, who at the time was in perfect health, she couldn't handle it. She was exhausted. He's in a wheelchair on a ventilator, and he's ready to go. And so that was the first thing. And the second thing is my respect for this man, who I only had one conversation with, was just shot up so high. Because over the years, I've had so many people on the air and people off the air that have run into really difficult circumstances, you know, where they've lost their children or they've had, you know, stage 4 cancer, or you fill in the blank. And somehow, because of those incidents, they became different people. And they subscribed that their change was for the better, even though it was through the worst of circumstances. So here's this guy who made millions and did all this great stuff, and he was a movie star and all the rest of it, and yet he was just as human, if not more human, than the people that went to watch the movies, because he was then put in a position to either literally, you know, stand up at some point for something that he knew he never would physically stand up for. And it was just impressive as hell. So the long and short of it is I've been working on this audio for about a month. And the reason I say that is because it was pretty, there's a lot of hiss in there and a lot of background noise, and the phone connection wasn't that great. We actually had telephones back then, there were no cell phones. And so this is May of 2002, and he passed away in 2004. And I started looking back at what my life was like then and how the world was then. And, you know, again, it's a reminder, it's a perspective shift that everything really stays the same. We just keep changing roles and characters and faces and names. And there's always challenges and there's always difficulties. So after about a month of working with this audio, I've got it down to about 28 minutes. It was a little bit longer. There was stuff in there I could not get to sound the way that it needed to sound from his perspective from the phone and what have you. So out of about a 40-minute interview, 28 of this is sounded like it needed to sound. And I've cobbled it together, put pieces in, and there was a lot of repetition. Just as an FYI, I took out, you know, the whole idea was to promote this paralysis center, and that was an ongoing theme. And I, after about the third time, you don't need to do it. However, that paralysis center is still there. It's still doing its job. You can go to the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation webpage, and every piece of information you need to know about what they do and why they do what they do, going all the way back to Chris and Dana Reeve, is there. So I didn't think it needed to be repeated six or eight times over and over again for you listening as a Life 2.0 podcaster. So without any further delay, I'll pick some stuff up on the other side of this, which I thought was interesting about Christopher Reeve. Here's The Man of Steel from May 2nd, 2002. At Power Talk Radio on News Talk 600 WCHT. Anyone that's ever gone to the movies in the last 20 years, of course, would recognize Christopher Reeve's name. He has become Superman and a superhero to millions of people all over the world. And I think his greatest endeavors and really his ability to show people how to really high flyer has come from the conduction of his life after, of course, the accident that paralyzed Chris. And he is doing something about it. Instead of going into a reclusive position on this, he has gone out and put his name all over the place because he's starting this Christopher and Dana Reeve New Paralysis Resource Center. Millions of Americans impacted by paralysis will be able to gain vital new resources because of the work that they are doing. And, of course, he shot a movie back in 79 on Mackinac Island. We're glad to have him joining us this afternoon from his home. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks very much.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you. The whole world knew, of course, what happened a few years back when you had the accident. And my first thought, I'm thinking, you know, you've done thousands of shows since then, and I'm sure you're asked the same questions over and over again. So I thought I would reverse it. Is there anything that you've wanted to say that no one's asked you about how your life has changed and the work that you do in the world now?
That's a really nice offer. I wish I had something prepared for that. but I guess the one thing that I get a little tired of is, you know, people say that, well, you played Superman in the movies, but now you're Superman in real life, and I feel that kind of, you know, is an easy catchphrase, and it's meant well, but it really overlooks the heroic efforts of people who don't have the kind of advantages that I have. There are people in nursing homes who shouldn't be there. There are people who don't even get range, don't get any exercise, who are closed in, and I mean, they're the ones who are really heroic.
Mm. What do you think people see in your struggle that they connect with so much? What is it about the fortitude or maybe the integrity that you hold that so many people that even are not paralyzed or connect with? Is there something that comes to mind?
Well, I think at first there was shock, you know, that, you know, because I'd played Superman in four movies and, you know, was well known around the world for that. And, of course, supposedly the only thing that can get him is kryptonite, but you know, to you know, break my neck over a jump, just I think brought home the fact that even someone that, you know, plays a superhero is a mere mortal, and it reminds us all of our mortality or our fragility. Mm-hmm. And yet we have within us resources and powers that we really don't know much about until we're tested.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's sort of the journey that I've been on. And, you know, if you'd asked me, oh, maybe in my 20s or something, said, okay, when you're 42, you're going to break your neck and be paralyzed. What are you going to do? I'd say, oh, shoot me. And, you know, then you realize you're actually in that situation, and but there are people around, my wife, my children, my friends, you know, that the body may not work as well as it did, but, you know, the heart, you know, the brain, the mind are, they are still intact. They work without, you know, without the body, and that's actually the most important part of it.
If you were, you said about looking back or looking ahead, if you had that opportunity, as you look back now in the last few years, what has changed most about you that probably wouldn't have changed had this not happened?
That I don't sweat the small stuff anymore. You know, I think that a lot of us, we really work ourselves up into a frenzy about a lot of very, very trivial stuff. I know I used to, you know, become something of a perfectionist, you know, and so I'd, you know, get overwrought about little details in life or things that were supposed to happen that didn't happen on time or whatever. And I look at that and go, relax. You know, take a chill pill. You know, because it's really, and the other thing is to tell the truth. I realize that a lot of times we don't always really say what we mean. You know, we want to make nice. It's kind of the grease that makes the world go around. But I guess once you've nearly kicked the bucket and you've ended up in a life-changing situation, I think it's very important. I find that I'm willing to say exactly, you know, exactly what I feel, and I think that that's a right. I think it's a responsibility and a privilege we all have to, you know, actually say what we really think, and people just have to. People have to deal with it.
A new national resource for people living with paralysis, their families, and their caregivers will open on May 3rd, 2002 in Short Hills, New Jersey. The Christopher and Dana Reeve Perilous Resource Center, PRC, will be the most comprehensive and accessible resource available to people living with paralysis and will be dedicated to improving their quality of life. A ribbon-cutting ceremony and a brief press conference will take place at noon, May 3rd, tomorrow. And Christopher and Dana will be there. They will cut the ribbon. We come back from this break, Chris. We're going to talk about what that center is and how much it means to you, and probably more importantly, what it's going to mean to all the people that are going to be accessible to it, you know?
Great. Thanks.
All right. Christopher Reeve joining me this afternoon. When I say this is the most powerful hours on radio today, it's because we're not knocking around on things that don't have any meaning, like politics and the other stuff. It's about life. Power Talk Radio continues.
Hi, this is Willie Jolly, author of A Setback is a Setup for a Comeback. And when I'm in Escanaba, I make it a point to listen to John St. Augustine on Power Talk Radio, News Talk 600.
Tomorrow at high noon, May 3rd, 2002, the Christopher and Dana Reeve are opening a brand new paralysis resource center in Short Hills, New Jersey. And Christopher Reeve, of course, joining me this afternoon. Chris, what's so different about what you and Dana are putting together that's never been done before?
Well, it's a nationwide service that encompasses everything you need to know about living with paralysis. And I don't think that that's really existed before, because we're not dealing only with spinal cord injury, but people who have, you know, stroke, spina bifida, MS, Lou Gehrig, you know, brain trauma, anything that causes paralysis. And the one service we provide is for people who... and their families who are newly injured, because when that happens, you are thrown into a world that is absolutely bewildering, complex, frightening, and overwhelming. And most people don't know where to turn. And then as you get past the trauma stage, then you need to know about, you know, transportation, accessibility, redoing your home, you know, travel, work, etc. And all you have to do is go online to paralysis.org, and there's a staff there 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, Eastern Time, and they can direct you to what you need.
Would we be surprised how many people suffer spinal cord injuries and other paralyzing injuries compared to all the news we hear about cancer and strokes and heart attack and cholesterol? Do you think most people get how much is really going on?
Well, you know, it's really hard to take is that... you know, it's still basically considered an orphan condition. meaning that there's a very small percentage of the population, but tell that to the 400,000 people who are paralyzed just by spinal cord injuries right now living with it in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And every year, there's 12,000 more just here in the U.S. And what's really tragic is that it happens mostly to young people in sports injuries and car accidents. You know, people in the prime of life when they're 16, 17, you know, like when I was in rehab, there was a kid who was 12 years old who was just horsing around on a trampoline with his brother, and he landed the wrong way and broke his neck, had a spinal cord injury. Then he's got his whole life ahead of him to deal with. So, you know, this is something that particularly affects the younger segment of the population, and quality of life, you know, a future is really, really important.
You would know better than most, and I suppose only anybody that's ever had any kind of setback in life, and you can fill in the blank to whatever that is, what it must be like to have to work out of a place that you didn't even know existed. And when you're going along and a very high profile guy, and then your life changes. So if somebody's out there listening today, Chris, that is in that early spot, you know, that they don't think there's anything out there for them, there's no reason to keep going, what do you say to those folks?
Right. Well, I say you have a choice. Well, there's really two choices. One is cave in, and the other is get going. And it's really hard early on to pick option number two because you don't know how to get going. You don't know what you're going to do or how you're going to get there. You don't know if you're going to be able to work, go back to school. But this is where you have to dig deep. And, you know, really, anybody can do it. It does not take, you know, superpowers, because we all have superpowers, in the sense that when the chips are really down, that once you decide that life is worth living, it's amazing what you can do and the resources you can find.
Mm.
So the first thing is you feel depressed, you feel like, you know, I'm not worth anything, and why bother? I remember saying early on, I'm just taking up space, maybe we should let me go, and then I realized that would be very selfish. Because there's people, anybody who's injured, people love you, more people than you think, and even if you think you're alone, you're not, because there are people all around the world who care.
What were the kind of things that Dana and the kids and the family and the friends, what were the kind of things that they were telling you early on? Were you able to hear what they were saying?
Yeah, I was, because, you know, Dana and I are so close when she speaks, and I always listen. But it was kind of interesting what she did. She, you know, when I said maybe we should let me go, maybe I, you know, should just check out, she said a very wise thing. And she said, you know, but you're still you, and I love you. And then she said, it's totally your choice, but I think you need to wait.
Mm.
So wait at least 2 years, and if you still feel that life is not worth living, then you can make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, that's a great technique, because once you've lived 2 years, you realize that life is worth living.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me because there's so much attention focused in the media on things, you know, the supposed reality shows and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then yet there's real life going on. And sometimes real life, as you know, doesn't pull the same kind of numbers as, quote, reality gets.
Yep.
And if you could, have you ever thought about using your name and coming back and having a show that would empower people, whether it was on television or radio, anything like that?
I haven't really, because I think just to do one show would really limit my effectiveness in
mm-hmm.
terms of you know, what I need to do in Washington to help with legislation,
mm-hmm.
you know, the traveling that I do to speak and you know, meet people, and also to run the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I spend about 4 hours a day in physical therapy
mm-hmm.
because science has discovered that that physical activity actually, you know, has an effect on the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, we don't know when a cure is coming. But I do say when rather than if, because it is coming.
Mm-hmm.
In spite of it debate about therapeutic cloning and all of that. But the thing is, it won't do you any good if your body has totally fallen apart because you haven't done anything. So skin condition, cardiovascular circulation, bone density, all these things are really crucial.
Mm.
And I wish that insurance companies would be more proactive and realize that if they would give people equipment to exercise, that they would get better. A lot of them would recover, go back to work, and you know, they would save money in the long run, but they don't really see it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of my crusades, is for proactive coverage.
Christopher Reeve joining me this afternoon. Quick timeout. Take care of the people that take care of us. I just want to read a little bit of a letter that was sent out that we received. Dana Reeve, Christopher Reeve's wife, sent this out. And it really just kind of says this: how could it happen to Superman? But it wasn't Superman who fell off a horse and broke his neck in a near-fatal riding accident. It was me, Christopher Reeve. In a matter of minutes, I joined the family of millions affected by spinal cord injury when I was left paralyzed from the shoulders down, unable to move or breathe on my own. And at first, as he was talking about, I thought about giving up and letting go, but the love and the support I received saved my life, and it gave me hope. And I think that's really bigger than any kind of Superman movie or any kind of message you could ever put out, is that because of the way Christopher conducts his life today, a lot of people find hope in that. He joins me this afternoon. Chris, we were talking briefly off there about change, and you know, even though it's a part of life, and it's always a part of life and always will be a part of our lives, human beings do not take to change very well. Sometimes it's imposed on us, as it was with you. What did you learn about the process of change?
Well, you've got to embrace it, because otherwise, you know, to deny it is to become even more paralyzed than you already are. So you can, you know, you have to deal with being physically paralyzed, but that doesn't mean you have to be mentally or emotionally paralyzed either. You know, so it's really important to separate the two. And mm-hmm. in fact, physical paralysis can liberate other areas of yourself. And for me, it's been writing, directing. It's been, you know, going around working the foundation. It's been being an advocate in Washington for disability rights, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And those are all things that I probably wouldn't have focused on otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Do you look at things in best and worst? Like, if I could have changed this, this would have been different, but now that this has happened, I would never change something? I mean, what would you not change if you had your way? What's been perfect in this for you?
Dana and the family. I mean, I am absolutely blessed by, you know, Dana, Matthew, Alexandra, and Will, and even our dog. This is Wonder Dog.
What's her dog?
But she's, you know, a really a beautiful soul. Dana is just a truly extraordinary person. We just, in June, we'll be celebrating 15 years together, and believe it or not, it's as fresh today, and it's deeper today than it was in the day we met.
Mm.
And a lot of times, people working on a relationship 15 years later, they're kind of wondering how to keep it together, and, you know, where did it go, and how do we get the romance back, and all that, and one of the real blessings is this event certainly kept that out of my life.
I suppose so. You look back on all these things, and of course, as you mentioned, 400 some odd thousand people affected, but really, it gets into the millions. When you look at this as your role now, probably the greatest role that you've ever been involved in, what do you hope people get when they go to the site or they get to the resource center? Is it simply the word hope?
Yeah, well, first of all, relief, you know, because people are in pain. You know, they're in emotional pain, physical pain. They're, you know, coming from a place of real distress. So you got to get out of that first. And then after that, when you feel better, then you can start to hope.
Mm.
You know, so when you're not hurting so bad, when you're dealing with, you know, when you've gotten over dealing, oh my God, I'm paralyzed, life is useless. You get past that, you go to the resource center, that's going to help you get past that. And then you can say, okay, well, wait a minute, I can travel, and actually, here's a good rehab center, and you know, there's these job opportunities, and that creates hope.
Mm. And if you want to call, again, the number is starting tomorrow, or is it online now?
It's online now, yeah.
Okay. Sound like
I would actually go paralysis.org.
Right.
Because that takes you to the website and you can just read the whole thing.
Everything's all there. Being ready, you know, this was not available to you when the accident happened, true?
No, that's one of the reasons that we worked for this. And we actually are very honored because this resource center is comes through the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta. They looked around, they evaluated a lot of different groups, and they honored us by getting Congress to appropriate the money for it. So we have a big responsibility here to the people.
Chris Reeve joining me this afternoon. We'll come back from this break. I just have a couple more questions for the man who's leading so many back to what's important in life. Power Talk Radio continues with more right after this.
Hi, this is Barbara DeAngelis, author of Secrets About Life Every Woman Should Know. Stay tuned for more Power Talk Radio with John St. Augustine on News Talk 600 WCHT.
Last few minutes we have together, Chris, I was thinking about how many people I've had on this show that have been in, because they say near death, and then, like, you're done, and you know it. And then they come back, and they have a long battle ahead of them. And a lot of people have encouragement, but there's also some things that may be discouraging. So for anybody listening today, from your position, what are some things that you should not be saying in any way, shape, or form to someone who has this kind of challenge?
They should not be saying any absolutes, like, you'll never walk again, you have 5 months to live, none of those things should ever be said by a doctor or a friend or anybody else. Mm. I'll give you one example. I had an infection on my left ankle about 4 or 5 years ago, and the doctor said, well, the infection is so bad that we're probably going to have to amputate your left leg. And I remember just thinking, that is totally unacceptable. And I said, well, you can't have my left leg. I'm going to need it.
Yeah.
So they did put me on antibiotics, but I remember somehow, digging really deep and just, I just drew a line in the sand somewhere, but in the bottom line, today, you wouldn't even know where the infection was.
Really? So is it
completely recovered from
it? Is one of the tools you talked about before, much like Helen Keller would, or somebody who had lost their sight or anything else, other things become keener? Is this mind-body connection become something important to you?
Yeah, the mind-body connection is something that we really, all of us, on our feet or not, really should spend more time investigating, because I do believe that that the disease and also recovery has a great deal to do with the mind and the body, that we can literally make ourselves sick, and we can also do a lot to make ourselves well. And I'm not talking about drugs. I'm talking about not just willpower, but somehow a depth of belief.
Mm-hmm. Chris, how do you define spirit? Is that something part of your life? Has that changed for you?
Well, it did, because basically I was very preoccupied, not with material things only, but just life in the here and now. You know, what's happening today, what's happening tomorrow. You know, kind of on the superficial side of things, and that's sort of part and parcel. You know, with a career as an actor, and you know, I was very lucky, so never really had to sort of ponder deeper things.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually, you know, being in a wheelchair and with time to think and to consider, and I really went through a journey over the last 7 years. I'd always had a problem with organized religion, because I felt, well, when I grew up in New Jersey, I used to go to church. I sang in the choir.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an Episcopalian church, and a lot of the hymns were about God the Father Almighty, and you know, his army, his truth is marching on,
mm-hmm.
and he's you know, the vengeance of his terrible sort of
mm-hmm.
that's already terrifying.
Mm.
You know, it sounded like a pretty terrifying father figure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who would love you 1 minute, but might really punish you the next.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, that was scary to me, and so I sort of turned away. But then what I've found over time is I've become a Unitarian Universalist, and So really what that is about is about it's about the search for the search for goodness, and the assumption that we are intrinsically good as people, and God recognizes that, and also that God is good and is not here to punish us, and that spirituality is all an attempt, the honest attempt every day to try to do something that is, you know, for others and larger than ourselves. I find that really rewarding.
Do you see your life as perfect now? That this is a, if you if that's your belief, that this kind of has to be the way it is for you to become who you are and other people to do the same?
Well, I, no, I would be lying to you if I said that I'm, you know, content to be disabled. No, that's not true. I there's a combination of acceptance and rejection. You know, so that I am in a place where I am not filled with anger, but I am, you know, filled with the hope and the desire to really, you know, do something about it, and yet I can live with it at the same time. So I'm not, you know, getting up every day and raging at the world. I'm trying to think about it.
And Chris, last 30 seconds, you want to say?
Well, I want to say hi to everybody in Michigan, particularly up in Mackinac Island.
There you go.
And also to everybody at the University of Wisconsin in Madison.
Yeah?
And the team of researchers under James Thompson, because they've done incredible work on stem cells, and we're very, very grateful for that. So hi to everybody in the peninsula and up in Wisconsin. And, you know, it's a great part of the country, and I really respect what you guys are doing out there.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay, thank you very much.
Take care.
Take care, bye.
Bye-bye. Can I doubt the art, though you know it wasn't written for you? Tell me, how can you stand there with your broken heart, ashamed of playing a fool? One thing can lead to another. It doesn't take any sacrifice.
The themes that he talked about in that conversation, that interview, whatever you want to call it, that exchange, to me are timeless. He was, as I've said before many times, and I picked up on what Wayne Dyer started talking about years ago. Wayne Dyer used to say, when you squeeze oranges, you get orange juice. When you squeeze tomatoes, you get tomato juice. It's very predictable. But when you squeeze people, you kind of never know what's going to happen. And, you know, Wayne's like more of a Hawaii, California dude. Here in Chicago, we say things like, when you get squeezed, all kind of shit comes out. And I believe that life squeezes each of us all the time at our weakest points to make us strong. And what bothers me may not bother you, and vice versa, and versi vice. And so there's this game going on, for lack of a better term, that squeezes us and puts us in positions to see what we're going to do, how we're going to grow, how we can change. And I had the feeling again after listening to that conversation all these years that that was Christopher Reeve's vice. And I mean V-I-S-E, not V-I-C-E. This was the vice that was going to squeeze him to see what was going to come out. He had it all. This is a guy who was at one point the biggest box office draw in the world. Superman has had 11 people play the lead role, but for millions of people, myself included, for some reason, Christopher Reeve's the guy. Might have been the way the first one, you know, came out, or I don't know. It's just like he was the guy. He's Superman. And there's been some great stuff afterwards, but there's just something about his portrayal of the Man of Steel that has stuck with many, many people. Fascinating guy. He, I found this thing about Juilliard, which I thought was really funny. He did a lot of work in Europe for a while, looking to hone his craft on the stage. And he returned to the U.S. from Europe. Reeve chose to focus solely on acting, even though he'd been accepted to Cornell and many other colleges. He's a brilliant guy. I mean, seriously off the charts intelligence. Cornell had several general education requirements for graduation he hadn't completed. He jumped over all that stuff like a lot of kids did in college, and he went through the high-minded stuff. He managed to convince the theater director, Jim Claus, and the dean of college and arts and sciences that as a theater major, he would achieve more at Juilliard. And they agreed his first year at Juilliard would be counted as a senior at Cornell. So he was able to work the system and put that together. In 1973, approximately 2,000 students auditioned for 20 places in the freshman class at Juilliard. I'm going to say it like that every time. Reeves' audition was in front of 10 faculty members, including one of my favorite guys of all time, John Houseman. John Houseman had just won an Academy Award for The Paper Chase. Christopher Reeve and Robin Williams were the only students selected for the advanced program at Juilliard. They had several classes together in which they were the only students. Can you imagine that? Robin Williams and Christopher Reeve in the class together, about as diametrically opposed as actors you can get. In their dialects class with Edith Skinner, Robin Williams had no trouble mastering all dialects naturally, whereas Reeve was more meticulous about it. So Williams and Reeve developed a very close friendship. They kind of worked off each other. In a meeting with John Houseman, Reeve was told, Mr. Reeve, it's terribly important that you become a serious classical actor. Unless, of course, they offer you a shitload of money to do something else. On May 27th, 1995, Chris Reeve's horse made a refusal to jump. The horse's name was Buck. Witnesses said that the horse began the third fence jump and then just stopped, and Reeve, of course, fell forward off the horse, holding onto the reins. His hands somehow became tangled in the reins, and the bridle and bit were pulled off the horse. He landed headfirst on the far side of the fence, shattering his first and second vertebrae. The cervical spinal injury, which paralyzed him from the neck down, also halted his breathing. Paramedics got there in less than 3 minutes and immediately took measures to get air into his lungs, taken to a local hospital, and he would remain in that condition for the rest of his life. And as I mentioned, you know, circumstances reveal us for who we are, not who we thought we were. And I've been in this position, we've all been in this position at some point, we thought, how in the world are we going to work out of this? How in the world do we overcome this? And interestingly enough, oddly enough, ironically enough, Christopher Reeve, about a year before this happened, played a paralyzed cop in a movie. He said when he played the cop, he kept thinking, God, I hope I'm never in this position. And a year later, less than a year later, he's in that position, not on the screen, but in real life. So I don't know how all these things work. Maybe it's better off that we don't understand all the ways and wherefores of our lives and how things turn out. Listening to this clip after so many years and edits over and over and over again and cleaning it up really had three pieces to me. It was very sad on one hand because this incredibly brilliant human being was gone at such a very young age. He was only 52 when he died in 2004. And it was also highly inspiring because, you know, he is in a position that most people will never be in, and he was still moving forward. He didn't go in some sort of reclusive state, even though he had his moments. He looked at what was around him, he took stock of where he was at, and he used what he was given to lift other people up. And then the third part of this is just, it's a reminder. It's this deep perspective that all of the garbage that diverts our attention from being alive is nothing more than what I said. It's a diversion. It doesn't amount to a cup of spit in the end. So, I hope you enjoyed this. There'll be more of these coming along. I don't know if they'll be as deep or as broad as the conversation I had with Chris Reeve. And, I'm sitting here looking at his picture right now. I wanted to make sure I connected to him in some way, shape, or form. And the man that I'm looking at in the wheelchair with his wife, Dana, who passed away, you know, not long after he did. I don't know how that happens. It just, wow. It's just something. I'm looking at this man. And I often wonder about fate, what fate has in store for us. And he alluded to some of this when I asked him about how his faith had changed and how fate may have played a role in all this. So it is always the great back and forth between the human and the being. Sometimes we do better than we think we can with the circumstances that come our way, and sometimes we don't. And they're really at the crux of all this is why I do the Life 2.0 podcast. And if we go within, we never go without. Thanks for listening. I appreciate the support. Until next time, safe travels. Adios.